Welcome to the second hour of the WINY Talk Show. Call 928-1350 to be heard. Telephone lines are open, so call now.
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show as we begin hour number two. And what a way to end the week here in our last hour of the talk show. This is truly what I'll call the best bipartisan representation that I think folks in Hartford should see and folks in Washington, D.C. should see. Let's run down the list of people that are here in our studio this morning. 29th District State Senator May Flexer. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
44th District State Representative Anne Dauphiné is here. Anne, good morning.
Good morning.
50th District State Representative Pat Boyd is here.
Good morning, Dave.
And 51st District State Representative Rick Hayes is here.
Good morning, Dave. Thanks for having
us. Wow. Thank you all for coming in. Again, truly a bipartisan representation, the best. And we're showing the rest of the state how it's done as all four of you are sitting together here in our studio on behalf of our listeners. Thank you for coming in. You're all coming from a Council of Governments meeting. You've been very engaged in the Council of Governments in general, and especially through the past few months with the controversy that's gone on. So you're all engaged in that. What did you walk away from meeting with our chief elected officials in northeastern Connecticut?
Well, okay, here we go. Obviously, they were interested in our thoughts on the governor's budget proposal. And the way I explained that to them, Dave, is, you know, I'm the new kid on the block. And I went into this with open eyes and benefit of the doubt. And unfortunately, when I left there on Wednesday, in my opinion, I was a little bit disappointed. I didn't see the cuts that I thought I was going to see or hoped that I was going to see. I saw the tax increases that are coming. I saw the proposal of tolls. And, you know, I'm aware that this budget will change drastically between now and the time that it's voted on. But right now I'm a little bit disappointed in what I'm seeing.
And will you take up the governor's invitation when he said, don't go to the microphones, come to me and talk to us? I appreciate you being here because I think the only one of the ways that you collect information is through talking with constituents and having them hear what you have to say and then bringing that back to the governor. But will you take advantage of that, Rick?
Oh, absolutely. I think every one of us will.
Pat, what about you?
So, you know, I had a mixed emotions having been in my second term and knowing the tone that the prior governor had. And the tone that Governor Lamont had was completely different. He was basically saying, this is my best first draft. I want feedback on it. Come see me. You know, I was very concerned about how small towns are treated, representing some of the smallest communities in the state. Some of the talk of regionalization and funding is a big concern. But I appreciate his openness, and I do plan to come see him as well with my concerns, in addition to coming to the WINY microphone.
I love it. Ann, what about you? What was your evaluation?
You know, I've met the governor previous to this report that he gave us on Wednesday, and I will say that I do think he's much different than Malloy in terms of approachability. He exuberates, if you will, a friendliness that I didn't sense from Malloy. So I do appreciate that, and he has spoken to all of us and invited us to have a conversation with him. So to that end, I do appreciate it. But back to what Rick said, I was a little disappointed. I didn't see a lot of different approach than I have in the past, although I do like his approach with the bonding and going on a debt diet. I did appreciate that. So there are some good things that he brought up, and we really don't know how it's going to all turn out. It's going to be a conversation with the legislature, so we'll have to wait and see.
And so you're going to have a very busy time moving forward sitting on appropriations.
Yes, and that's starting this week.
Right.
So we will be busy. I know Senator Flexer's on that as well, and it is going to be – I'm new to that, and it's – quite overwhelming for a new person to come on to that. I'm on four subcommittees and I'm looking at it and it's all Greek to me. So it's going to be very, very interesting. But I'll let Senator Flexer kind of fill you in. She's a little bit more of an expert than I am.
May, what about your evaluation of Wednesday?
So I think that my biggest takeaway was that the governor's door is always open, to the point that's been raised here several times this morning. It is so refreshing to have someone whose door is open and said, hey, you don't like my ideas? You got a better one? I'm willing to listen to it. And that's just a totally new approach. I know that, you know, in the last several weeks and months, I've had the opportunity to talk with Governor Lamont several times on a variety of issues, particularly about things that affect us here in northeastern Connecticut, whether it's Quinnipiac Valley Community College. I think it's going to start to be a joke. You're coming to talk to me about the college again, or Day Kimball Hospital or whatever. And so I'm trying to be optimistic. I have some concerns about many of the things that he outlined the other day, but you can't help but be optimistic when someone is as warm and welcoming and seems to be genuine in his invitation to have a conversation, not just with legislators, but with people from all over the state.
So what do you all see as maybe the number one issues that you heard on Wednesday that would affect northeastern Connecticut? Is it the hospital tax? Is it the school regionalization? Is it tolls? Are there some things that you're saying, boy, I heard this on Wednesday, and this is going to have an effect on us here in the quote-unquote quiet corner?
Well, I would say a couple of things about that, the topics that you raised. First of all, the school regionalization stuff, I think that the governor has taken a different approach than some of the other proposals that are out there in terms of wanting to provide towns and schools with carrots to regionalize and share more services. And I think that's something we've been a leader on in northeastern Connecticut for a long time, particularly because of the great work of NECOG. And I think on the tolls thing, look, tolls are not my favorite thing. And I was really hopeful that we were going to be able to move forward with following Rhode Island. Something that maybe you'd be grateful for in northeastern Connecticut, we saw in the Appropriations Committee yesterday that the proposal doesn't put any tolls on 395.
Yes.
So and I hate to be so parochial about it, but you couldn't help but notice that, and at least have some gratitude for that. And then what was the third thing that you mentioned? You said regionalization.
Or recreational marijuana or QVCC.
Well, again, interestingly, the hospital issue. So interestingly, his budget didn't say anything about marijuana, and there's no revenue in the budget concerning marijuana. So he talked about it, but he didn't put money in the budget counting on it. And then the hospital issue, I'm really concerned. We were all, I think, last week at the annual corporators meeting for Day Kimball Hospital, and they're talking about having a new partner, which is a good thing, and for Day Kimball to have some support, but they've got to be very careful about where that support comes from in terms of how that's going to affect the Medicaid dollars that we've been protecting for a long time that help to keep Day Kimball afloat, with a recognition that at a small local independent hospital that also has a high Medicaid population needs that extra revenue.
Do you all see what the governor put forward as help for the hospital or not?
I think it remains to be seen. I mean, there's an outstanding lawsuit between the hospitals and the state of Connecticut that hasn't been resolved yet. We're talking about millions of dollars that the state would have to pay out. I think the hospitals are nervous about what that settlement might be. I believe the small hospital pool, which affects Day Kimball, is in the budget. I don't know if it's funded Senator Flexer?
I asked the Secretary of OPM, Secretary McCaw, that question yesterday, and she said that it's fully funded in their proposal and unchanged.
Which is huge, because in the past, that fund, which helps the few left independent hospitals like Day Kimball is, with some additional funding, is huge. For me, the biggest issue out of that is municipal aid, because, you know, what are we going to be funding our towns for local infrastructure and schools? You know, in the case of the towns I represent, there's a 2-5% decrease in all of them. And these are towns that run very lean budgets already. So, you know, the concern is our municipality is going to have to raise property tax to make the difference up. And, you know, I think there's a fair amount of advocacy, and we talked about this with the first selectman today and mayors, is that, you know, there's a lot of voices from all over the spectrum representing our urban areas. There's not a lot of voices other than ourselves about rural Connecticut. And so we talked about how, as a group, we can better advocate to the players, the governor's office, the leadership of both the House and the Senate and the Appropriations Committee, that rural issues don't necessarily mean that we don't use our money efficiently. Because the assumption is lots of it, small population, there must be savings there somewhere. And that just simply isn't the case.
And, you know, Dave, I also have the concern of the cost sharing for the teachers' pensions. Yes. I think that's going to be a hit for us locally, too. And whether that funding comes from the municipal side or the Board of Education side, it doesn't matter because it all comes out of the same pocketbook. So I'm concerned with that one as well. But I'm also deeply concerned with some of the stuff that hasn't surfaced yet. You know, the motor vehicle tax is still floating around. And I'm being very cautious on making any kind of judgment on where that's going to go, because that still has potential to hurt us big time as well.
I mean, what about the sales tax? opening up some of those exemptions. Where do you fall on that? Are you hearing anything from your constituents out this way as far as how it could relate to them?
So we've been told that there would be no increase in income tax or sales tax. There's several items that will be taxed that haven't been taxed in the past. But this is what I will say. We all came from a NECOG meeting this morning, and that's why we ended up coming here. But I think as a delegation, we do agree on some things here. And I think Senator Flexer mentioned them, the hospital, the college, the community college. We did testify yesterday in front of higher ed regarding the consolidation and or closing of the local college. So, you know, there's a lot of concerns. I mean, I think at the face of it, people think, well, consolidation will save money. But I think Representative Boyd talked about that today in the NECOG meeting, that many of our small towns work extremely lean, and we don't have many of those things that other towns have. I know Representative Rivero has talked about this a lot. For example, garbage pickup and some of the things that many of the bigger towns incorporate into their mill rates that we don't have here. So we do run very lean machines here in our local town. So I think our voice was heard yesterday at the higher ed. I think that we tried to make a case that in rural Connecticut here on the east side of the river, we operate very differently than the rest of the state. And that has been our struggle, quite frankly. I mean, if you look at some of the bigger cities that have three or four or five representatives, and then you have us that are spread very, very thin. For example, Senator Flexer has eight towns. And I don't know how many you have, Representative Boyd, but I know he has five. So we all are spread very thin in terms of how much we cover. And some of those towns have three or four or five representatives that are a voice for them. So we struggle to make the argument that we do run and operate very differently here in rural Connecticut. We always say the east side of the river. So that's what I'll say. But I do know this delegation is committed to supporting the hospital and supporting Quinnipiac Valley College and trying to salvage, you know, funds to our towns for proposed cuts.
May, when you and I spoke after our interview with Mark Ojakian, you had some concerns. You said, I didn't hear from Mark Ojakian what those specific cuts, if there were any to be made, would be. Have you gotten any more answers as a result since the last time we spoke?
I haven't, but yesterday, the timing of the hearing on the bill that we're all working on concerning the putting some legislative oversight over the consolidation of community college and what President Ojakian is trying to do in creating the Community College of Connecticut and taking away local autonomy and local identity, the timing worked out really well because we had a couple of student leaders from Quinnipiac Valley Community College who came to testify. And the way we do it in the Higher Education Committee, where I'm the vice chair, is that we value the voices of students, and so they get to speak early in the process, and President Ojakian got to sit there and listen to them, which I thought was fantastic. And so he got to hear their passion for the college, their experience, and the students that they represent. They were both leaders in the student government at QVCC, so I thought that was good. And then when he came up to testify, he and I did have a back and forth. It's the first time we've spoken in quite some time because he knows how vocal I've been against the consolidation of the community colleges. But we're going to get into the weeds on the budget. Very soon. And I am in the Appropriations Committee, like Representative Dauphiné described, there are subcommittees, and I'm the chair of the Higher Education Subcommittee in Appropriations. So that is where I'm going to really demand accountability and answers, because there is no proof in the savings of the plan that President Ojakian has been pushing. And I'm going to really, I know we're all going to really push there to say, you can't do this without proving that there's actual savings here.
We're not such a quiet bunch up
here. Well, we have his attention because it was actually perfect. And I talked to some of the students and they said it was a little intimidating that they're testifying and President Ojakian is sitting behind them listening. Later on in the public hearing, Representative Daphne and myself on behalf of the whole delegation testified in favor of the bill to give legislative oversight, and Joaquin was in between, and he talked about coming on WINY. He talked about how he's willing to talk to any group that would like to. So, you know, I think, you know, getting him to meet with the foundation and students is something that he committed to do publicly on the record, you know, we have his attention.
Good. Good. Well, isn't that what it's all about? Let's take a quick break. We'll give our legislators a minute to come up for air, and then we have more questions for them. Stay tuned.
Listen to this. Buy any brand new 2018 Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, or Ram in stock and get your choice of a 55-inch Samsung curved HD smart TV or a Pit Boss stainless steel four-burner gas grill during the President's Day sales event going on this month at Putnam Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram at the corner of Routes 44 and 21 in Putnam. Here's Mark Dexter with the details.
2018 Jeep Renegade Latitude 4x4 with cold weather group and remote start. Buy for $24,399, including a $2,750 factory rebate. 2018 Jeep Compass Latitude. Buy for $25,499, including a $3,250 factory rebate. All new body style JL 2018 Jeep Wrangler Sport with turbo engine, automatic transmission, and air conditioning. Buy for $31,899.
Tax plus $498, 25 dealer conveyance fee, extra to qualified buyers to $228,19. Online at PutnamChrysler.com. We're talking insurance with Allison Fournier, an insurance professional at Girardi Insurance Services.
It's winter in New England, and we're ready to insure your winter toys at Girardi Insurance Services.
Winter toys?
Let's say you own snowmobiles. Maybe you have two snowmobiles and a trailer that you'll be towing for a weekend in Maine. Naturally, we hope that you have an enjoyable trip, but should something go wrong, we're here to help at Girardi Insurance Services. Maybe you have four-wheelers that you use on your property or tow to other locations for recreation. We have insurance for that. Many people own second homes in warmer climates or cabins up north for hunting and fishing. You'll need coverage for that property and sufficient liability insurance as well. We can handle that at Girardi Insurance Services. Give us a call and we'll be happy to sit down with you and work out a custom plan that gives you the coverage you need at a price you can afford. And if you ever do have a problem, we'll be there for you with local, face-to-face service. That's what we do at Girardi Insurance Services.
Call Girardi Insurance Services today at 860-928-7771 and see them online at GirardiOnline.com.
Steve here from Long Pond Hearth and Home. Come see us at the Southeastern Connecticut Home Show at Mohegan Sun this weekend. Long Pond Hearth and Home, best kept secret in Eastern Connecticut. Website, cthearthandhome.com.
Are you looking for a job? WINY has the answer. It's called the WINY Help Wanted Exchange. Every day, local employers are searching for potential personnel. Go to WINYradio.com and click on the WINY Help Wanted Exchange for a list of current job postings in our area.
Go see what's going on at WINYradio.com.
Be part of the solution, not part of the problem. Call the WINY Talk Show now and offer your opinion and ideas at 928-1350. Call now and be heard.
Call. Don't be afraid. You can call me. Tell me and I'll be around.
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show. It is 1026 and joining us in studio this morning, 44th District State Representative Ann Dauphiné is here. 29th District State Senator May Flexer is here. 50th District State Representative Pat Boyd is here. And 51st District, last but not least, Rick, Chief, sorry. 51st District State Representative Rick Hayes. They're all here in studio. We're talking about, really, I know that we started the session back on January 9th, but in reality, things really started on Wednesday. Is that a yes. Correct assessment? All right. One of the other items, as you all know, because when you visited here, we've talked about it in the past, minimum wage. There was a proposal within...
Great. Now we're going to disagree.
Sorry.
Kumbaya.
Well, no, I still do think, and I wrote it down, this is the best representation of bipartisanship that we can show off to the rest of the state by having you all here.
Let me just say something quick that you know, we all get along very well. And that is not the case in other areas. So despite, you know, political ideology that's all over the map, we do get along well. We talk all the time as a group. And I don't know if they, if your listeners know that, and but we do.
That's important. And I'm not trying to throw a spike into the punch here as we're talking about it, but minimum wage is such a divisive issue. It was part of what the governor's address on Wednesday. We're talking about going up to $15 an hour over the course of, 4.5 to 5 years. What did you, it was a, for me, as I was watching and listening to it, it was a State of the Union moment where there was a pretty obvious visual split as the camera panned across the chamber.
We can replicate it here if you like.
No.
<I'm just kidding.
laughs> You know, Dave, I think...
But where when you all heard that, what do you think? Now that we have some more detail on it.
I agree that that one was pretty much split right down the aisle, and it was pretty obvious in the chamber when you saw it. I guess I could answer for all four of us because you know what we're going to say. I was against it throughout my campaign. If there's any shining light to it, I like the way it's broken down over the 4 years. But it's still not one of my favorite talking points, and I bet this goes 50-50 around this bench.
Well,
okay, Representative Boyd, you're up next.
Maybe not. I should have taken that bet. I've had concerns about it all along. I would have liked to have seen it dragged out to 5 years as opposed to, I think, 4.5 is the proposal. You know, frankly, I from the people I represent and the small businesses, I've heard a lot of feedback on. I have not been supportive of it in the last session. I've kept an open mind, but I can't see myself supporting it.
Okay. And I stand corrected.
Okay. Anne.
And I've been vocal about it as well. I mean, I see it. I know we differ here, but I see it as surely hurting the most vulnerable, and that would be the poor and the seniors. And I think at the face of that, a lot of people think, well, how can it hurt the poor? But when you look at how minimum wage works, and when you raise minimum wage, it is going to drive the cost up, the very cost that everybody's trying to, if you will, overcome, right? They want to make more money so they can make things more affordable, but things will become more expensive. And I've talked to dozens and dozens of businesses who say it's going to cripple them. And I mean, I wasn't softened by the period of time where it was going to be unveiled, because that's how we always unveil minimum wage. I mean, imagine if it went up to $15 this year. I mean, you would see businesses closing, you know, right and left. So I wasn't impressed with that at all. But, you know, those seniors that are on fixed incomes, they're going to be very, very, very hurt by this, I believe. Their incomes aren't going up when the costs of everything are going to go up. And I think we had a local restaurant owner here in town that spoke highly against it and talked about how that was going to impact businesses and the people that he serves. So I know Senator Flexer will differ with me, but we'll agree to disagree.
But all right, I want to get to May next, but how do you answer and the challenge? We need to keep up with our neighbors. Our neighbors are going up to $15 an hour. We need to stay competitive in the state.
Well, I would say to you, we're not staying competitive for a lot of other reasons. I mean, I don't know that that makes us competitive. We want businesses to come here, right? We want to make it such that the environment is welcoming, and making it more difficult and the cost higher for them to run a business is not going to be helpful to them. And they've told me that over and over and over again. I'm an active member in the Northeast Chamber, and I haven't talked to one business among the chamber that is saying that that's not going to impact their business in a negative way.
Okay. May, the floor is yours on this.
So obviously, I feel very strongly in the opposite direction about this. I would say that there are many people who would like for us to go to $15 an hour this year. I think what the governor's proposed is a measured approach. And I think we have to recognize that the minimum wage is the real way that many people support a family in northeastern Connecticut and all across our state. I think you raise a good point about being competitive with our neighbors. The proposal that the governor has put forward, I support. support, and it is in line with the increase of the minimum wage that's already the law in Massachusetts. So I don't think it puts us at a competitive disadvantage. And I think the proposal phased in over time gives businesses an opportunity to plan. And I have spoken with many business owners. I've spoken with many small business owners and, frankly, younger small business owners who get that we need to update our policies and make sure that we've got wages in place that can help them be competitive as well, and making sure that they can have wages that show the true value that they have for their employees. And I think it's, and I've said this before, and I think just for a moment, I think it's nice that we can agree on some things that are important for our corner and yet yeah. still disagree about this, and it's okay. But I think it's important to recognize that the person who earns the minimum wage is much different than it was 30 years ago. 30 years ago, the average minimum wage worker was not 30-something years old, and that's the case today. There are many people who cobble together an income with two or three minimum wage jobs to make ends meet, to raise their families, and to keep a roof over their heads. And it's not just teenagers who earn the minimum wage anymore. And that's because I think we've got a really unfair economic structure, not just in our state, but in our country, where we've all been tricked into keeping wages low so that the people at the top can make lots of profits.
When you hear opposition from your friends to your left here in the studio.
They're not to my left, but I'm sorry. It was too easy.
I know. I did. I walked right into that one. But when you hear them and they talk about the effect on business, you said that you've heard from business, but what about the pushback from the business end of it?
Yep.
When you hear your contemporaries say that, is there anything that they say that would convince you to move one way or another?
What they're saying is certainly true, that many, they are expressing the concerns of many business owners. Again, I've spoken to those business owners too, and that is their point of view. And I've just I just come down on this differently, because again, I don't think that's the unanimous opinion of all business owners, first and foremost. And I think this is a measured approach. I think it's important to recognize that there are many people in the state capitol who believe we should have done 15 last year, 15 this year. And there are people who are frustrated that the governor's proposal is so slow. And I think we've got to find a happy medium so that small businesses in particular can plan and have some predictability in terms of what their wage costs are going to be. But we've got to recognize the value of these workers who work incredibly hard and don't get paid enough to make ends meet. If you work full time, you should be able to support yourself and your family. And right now, on today's minimum wage, you can't.
So let me ask those of you that disagree, is there anything that you heard Senator Flexer say that might help you veer one way or another differently?
I would even more strongly oppose it, and I will say that I would suggest to you that there's going to be less jobs available. I think people will find ways. I think you already look at some of the fast food restaurants that are going with technology versus hiring people, and I think that the goal is to help the poor, right, or help the lower. Minimum waged individuals, but I think it's going to hurt them in the end when we see everything inflate and they're still not going to be able to afford it. And minimum wage was never and still is not intended to be something that you can make a living on. It was meant to be a trainer's wage, an opportunity for unskilled workers to get a job and learn how to work, learn how to, get a paycheck and punch in and follow direction and that sort of thing. And I think that we're starting to see less and less of that available, and particularly to our youth. So I would say that.
And I guess my fear, Dave, and I've mentioned this before, my fear would be that I would rather see two people have a $10 an hour job than one person have a 15 hour job. And that would be my fear, is that I think we're going to lose a number of jobs because of this. So whether it's because we're going automated or it's because businesses are closing because they can't do it. But I think we're going to lose jobs because of this.
Well, we have some disagreement in the studio, folks, but for our listeners, they should know that everybody's listening to one another. And that is what Representative Boyd was trying to point out earlier, that while we disagree, we still all work together. Again, another great example that we set here in northeastern Connecticut. I need to take another quick break. When we come back, We've got all kinds of calls lined up for you. Your constituents want to talk to you this morning. We'll take a break and we'll return with more right after this.
For 50 years, there has been a local organization that puts heart and soul into its work. Hi, I'm Angie Viant-Jondro from Maculitis Rehabilitation and Skilled Care in Putnam. If you require rehab after a hospitalization or surgery, we will care for your physical needs while attending to the whole person. Our holistic approach and special expertise in spiritual care for people of all backgrounds is what sets us apart from other rehab centers and nursing homes in the area. Patients are likely to recover better and thrive more quickly when they feel like human beings and not just a knee or a hip problem. Perhaps you need a place for mom or dad while you're on vacation, or you need to consider 24-hour or end-of-life care. We can help. If you have surgery already scheduled, talk to us. You can tour our rehab wing featuring mostly private rooms with your own shower and bathroom, and you can meet our compassionate, competent, and dedicated staff. Call us at 860-928-7976 and see us online at matulitisnh.org. Come see where good conquers.
What's your game plan for college? Figure it out by attending Quinebaug Valley Community College's open house on Wednesday, March 6th at 6 p.m. at the Danielson campus. Come and learn about our 50 degrees and certificates and meet our faculty, students, and alumni. Don't miss your chance to qualify for a $1,000 scholarship towards your degree. It's simple. Apply to QVCC on or before March 6th, attend the open house, and you might be the student selected for a $1,000 scholarship for 2019. Learn more at qvcc.edu/open house.
B's Discount Wine and Spirits in Killingley and Brooklyn is family-owned and operated, offering the best price, selection, and customer service. Whether you know exactly what you're looking for, or if you like to browse and learn about new products, wines, and craft beers, B's Discount Wine and Spirits is for you. You'll find B's Discount Wine and Spirits in the Killingley Commons Plaza on Route 101 in Dayville and at 488 Providence Road, Route 6 in Brooklyn. Be sure to follow their Facebook page for frequent updates on new products and weekly tasting events at B's Discount Wine and Spirits in Killingley and Brooklyn.
Nothing adds to your special event like the perfect limousine. Signature Limousine, your locally owned and operated limousine service, provides the best vehicle options at the best prices. Signature offers the latest executive stretch limos as well as dedicated sedan service. Don't stress with parking at the airport or with casino traffic. Call Signature and go worry-free. Speak with owner Bob Kaminsky and visit with Signature Limousine at WINY's Wedding Expo. Remember Signature Limousine for your special events. 860-974-2974.
The Ellis Expo Trade and Technology Fair is coming to Ellis Tech in Danielson on Wednesday, February 27th. Prospective students, parents, and the entire community is welcome to tour the beautiful Ellis Tech facility and see the amazing displays from all 11 trade areas. The event is free and open to everyone. WINY will broadcast live at the Ellis Expo Trade and Technology Fair Wednesday, February 27th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. at Ellis Tech, 613 Upper Maple Street in Danielson.
It's the Frog Rock Youth Basketball Championship Games on WINY 1350 AM and 97.1 FM. On Saturday evening, the broadcast team will be out at the Rectory School for a special presentation of the Frog Rock Youth Basketball League Championship Games. The Division II title game will be getting underway at 4:15, followed by the Division III Championship at 5:45. This special presentation of Frog Rock Youth Basketball is brought to you by Weiss Hale & Zahansky, Strategic Wealth Advisors, and the Frog Rock Youth Basketball League.
Check out these great weekly specials from The Shop, 297 School Street in Putnam. Every Monday, seniors, police, fire, and EMS personnel take 10% off. Every Tuesday, all active military take 10% off. Wednesdays and Thursdays, you get a complimentary wax treatment. And on Fridays, take $5 off any styling service. For an appointment, call 860-928-3321 or book online at theshop.salonrunner.com. The Shop, 297 School Street in Putnam. Open 7 days a week and locally owned. See the Shop at WINY's Wedding Expo.
If you're getting married, don't say yes to the dress until after you visit with the bridal fashion experts at the Trinket Shop in Danielson. The Trinket Shop has hundreds of beautiful gowns to choose from for brides, bridesmaids, flower girls, and mothers by all your favorite designers. They also rent tuxedos, all styles and all budgets. Don't say yes to the dress until you visit with the Trinket Shop at WINY's Wedding Expo or make an appointment today for personal one-on-one guidance in the privacy of their bridal salon at the Trinket Shop, 103 Main Street in downtown Danielson.
Do you have something to say? Pick up the phone and dial the WINY Talk Show now. 928-1350 is the number to call. Our telephone lines are open. 928-1350.
Whenever you call me, I'll be there. I'll be around.
Welcome back to the WINY Talk Show. We have lots of calls on the line for our guests this morning. Many of our delegation to Hartford are here in studio this morning, and let's get right to the phones. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. This is Mark in Brooklyn. First, I take offense at Senator Flexer's portrayal saying that I don't care about my employees if I don't pay them $15 an hour. Some of us just can't afford to pay higher wages and stay competitive in the state. Secondly, I saw an article that said the Department of Labor statistics showed that employment in Connecticut went down by over 6,000 people when it was raised to 1010 the last time. Does Senator Flexer have any different data on this?
All right. Good question, Senator. You want to address that?
Yes, thank you. And we've spoken many times before, and I was not suggesting that someone that doesn't already pay their employees $15 an hour doesn't value them. I was suggesting that I've spoken to many business owners who do value their employees like you do. They just differ than you on this issue, and they think moving to the $15 an hour minimum wage is an appropriate thing to do. And I've seen the study that you've given to me before. I've discussed it with the State Department of Labor, and their numbers are different than the things that you've given to us in the past.
All right. Caller, thank you for ringing in. We have lots of calls, so we want to get to as many as we can. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning. First, I just want to say thank you to all of your representatives there today. I also am in an elected position in the town of Thompson on the Board of Education, and I just want to say thank you for your service. It's sometimes it's thankless. But you try to make the right, opinion based on on the majority of opinion. So thank you. The first question I have, and my name is Tom Angelo, by the way, for full disclosure. We're an alliance district, and one of the issues right now is the alliance funding coming to our town as we're in the midst of our budget season. Is there any insight? Is that alliance funding coming? And if you don't have the answer today, that's totally fine. I don't want to put you on the spot like that. If you could just voice our opinion in Hartford, it'd be greatly appreciated.
So thank you so much for calling, and thanks for your kind words. I know that Representative Hayes and I are on top of this. I've had multiple conversations with the State Department of Education about the issue with Thompson and the Alliance District funding, and we're working with some of our colleagues from Groton that has the same issue with Alliance funding, and we're working to make sure that Thompson gets the funding that they were promised for this year, and we're trying to do it quickly so that those of you on the Board of Education and in the schools can use the resources as you had planned at the beginning of the fiscal year and not having it just come to you in June when it's less effective. I don't know, hopefully we can get it to you in the next 2 months or so.
Rick, did you want to address that as well?
No, she hit it head on. We are working with two representatives from Groton as well, and Senator Heather Summers is also working with us. So it's out there, and we are working real hard on that.
All right. Caller, thank you for ringing in. On to our next call. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Dave.
Good morning.
What I heard from the governor the other day is taxes, taxes, and more taxes. I have my daughter and son-in-law, both recently retired, and they are leaving the state because of taxes. They are moving out. I talked to my son, who's going to be retiring pretty soon, and he and his wife are giving us an indication that they're leaving the state because of taxes. Now, you look at the proposal, tolls, that's a two-way tax. You pay tolls, you go to the store, you're going to pay more because the truckers are going to pass the toll fees onto the goods. The ECS grants in my town are going down. That means my property taxes are going up. The talk about the teacher's retirement may be paid by the towns. That'll make my property taxes go up. And they talk about the minimum wage. The minimum wage is just for people who are just starting out. It's not meant to be supportive of a family. Anyone that starts at minimum wage, it's up to them to educate themselves and move on to something bigger and better. And we shouldn't strap the small businesses with this minimum wage.
Boy, Roger, you've covered a lot of ground. Let's let our representatives weigh in.
I've got some more.
Yeah,
I'm not through yet, but go ahead. I'll weigh in.
All right, thank you. Tolls, passing those costs on in a couple of different fashion to the consumer. We've talked about that a little bit already, but does anybody want to weigh in on that one?
You know, I can just do that. I have those concerns as well, Roger, and we've talked about that many, many times. I do know that this was a proposal, so it's a skeleton proposed by the governor that the legislature will look at and make decisions on. So it is a starting point. I personally know that I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of people who say they can't afford to live here, and now I see it as more cost to our constituents and the probability of even more people leaving. They already can't afford it, and we're adding more cost to them. And I think that proposal adds over $1.5 billion in increased spending to the budget if that were implemented. But again, it's just a proposal. We don't know how that's going to fare out when it's said and done.
All right. Roger, thanks for dialing in. We want to get to a few more calls here. You're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Dave. Hello, panel. I'll try to get through this real quick. I want to tie a couple issues together, the minimum wage and our tax problem in the state of Connecticut. Just to start with, the minimum wage was never about training wages or anything like that. People have been paid the minimum wage for 60 years, and a lot of it didn't have a whole hell of a lot to do with training. And it's a very tired argument to say that if you ask for more, that we're going to fire you. You're not going to have a job. Those are old Republican talking points, I hate to tell you. But there are no studies, absolutely zero, zip studies nationally that show that large decreases in employment with raises in minimum wage. That's just false.
All right, Dave, if you have any questions for our panel,
yes,
I want to get to other calls as well. So
I do have a question. Governor Malloy said his door is open. Would one of you please go into his office and ask him what I'm going to tell you is true? In terms of taxes, state taxes, licensures, and fees, and I've said this many, many times before, people who make over $250,000 in this state pay less of a percentage of their income in licenses, taxes, and fees than I do, people like me, people like you, upwards of probably more than 2% more we pay than people over $250,000. If you just level the tax playing field, there's close to $2 billion right there just leveling the field. Would somebody please go in and ask if that's true? And, they just last year.
All right, Dave, let's let our representatives respond to that piece. Do you want to go around the room? We'll start with May.
I've actually said just that to Governor Lamont, and there was a tax incident study that was done by a nonpartisan group about 3 years ago. And actually, just yesterday, I know that Keith Faniff was in here on this program a couple of weeks ago, and he's my go-to from the Connecticut Mirror in terms of what's real and what's not, because he doesn't have an agenda. He just got the facts, and he's the best expert, I think, on the state budget and issues like this. And just yesterday, in analyzing the governor's budget, he made the point that you're making, Dave, and he talked about in that tax incident study how a person who makes $48,000 a year in the state of Connecticut pays 25% of their income to state and local taxes. 25%, not federal taxes, just state and local taxes, 25% of the $48,000. A person who makes $600,000 a year pays 7% of their income in state and local taxes. Again, not federal, state and local. And I think that's a huge disparity, and I wish the governor's proposal was more focused in that area and creating some fairness in the state of Connecticut, because I understand why people are frustrated about taxes, and they feel like they're being nickel and dimed. And if you make 50 grand a year and you're talking about tolls and you're talking about different proposals on beverages or whatever, it feels like you're being nitpicked, and that 25% that we talked about is only going to go up, while the people who make $500,000 a year aren't seeing much of a change at all. And I think that's a real problem, and it's unfair.
So that's not being addressed well enough, according from May's response. What about all of you? Are you on the same boat on that?
Well, I think if the governor says everything's on the table and he insists upon raising revenue in his proposal, everything needs to be on the table. I think a lot of his criticism is, you know, he's a wealthy man from Greenwich, and so the criticism he's gotten is that he's not he's been protective of the wealthy. And I think that if he says everything's on the table, everything should be on the table.
All right. Why don't we move on to our next telephone call? You're on the air. Good morning. Hello, you're on.
Hello.
Yes.
Hey. I haven't listened to the whole show, I'm sorry, but I want to ask about the community college situation.
Yes, we have addressed it, but go ahead. Give us your question.
I understand that they're already planning this next month to interview and to hire the four or five people who will take over the consolidated areas in the state. So these are people who will replace the individual presidents at each college. If this is happening, if they're going ahead with this plan, sort of steamrolling it through, how is it going to be stopped or at some point checked?
Good question. All right. How are we going to address that? Who wants to take that one?
Okay. That is true. President Oljigian actually said that yesterday in the Higher Education Committee, that they are moving ahead with their plan to hire the regional presidents as soon as April. They're in the process of narrowing it down to finalists. This is, again, why I think the legislation that we're working on together is so important to sort of slow this down. The other thing that was interesting in the hearing yesterday was the President Oljigian, if you remember, almost a year ago, the accrediting body, NEASC, came down and said, whoa. Slowed it down. They didn't quite say no forever, okay, but they said, no, this plan moves too quickly. And so what we thought was that they were going, that the Board of Regents was going to go back and follow the advice of NEASC. And what they've decided to do instead is to restart the process with their same proposal again, with a recognition that it couldn't happen until 2022. And I think it's important for people who are really in tune to this issue to know that, because we certainly didn't know that in the legislature until yesterday. Again, this is why I think we've got to reinsert legislative oversight. President Oljigian and I had a disagreement yesterday when the Board of Regents was created. He was serving, I believe, as chief of staff for then Governor Malloy. And there was a promise made to the legislature that the creation of the Board of Regents was not going to result in the elimination of these individual institutions or the closure of campuses. And while I do believe that President Oljigian is committed to not closing institutions, he is trying to create one community college of Connecticut, which I just think is completely wrong for our state. And that's why we've got to work quickly to get this measure passed.
So if this measure passes, would that just automatically put a stop to this hiring process?
It would force him to come to the legislature for approval. And
for these hirings?
For merger or consolidation or closure. So, again, the lawyers would have to splice it, but the legislation is written as such that this would be a merger. This would be a consolidation. I think I recognize Bill's voice in the air. It has become a race to the legislature to insert our authority. If we can't build consensus amongst our colleagues and get something through that's signed by the governor, it's going to be hard to stop it. You know, but it's in committee now, and you know, that's where Senator Flexer sits on the committee, which is good to have a ringer with that. We hope that the committee will JF it, which is joint favorable to the floor, language that encompasses this, and both the House and the Senate can debate it. Meanwhile, we're trying to have conversations with the governor. He's been on record here in northeastern Connecticut during the campaign opposing the consolidation.
And we will ask him again when he joins us on Wednesday of next week.
Yep. And so it's really, you know, we're doing what we can within our statutory authority to try to stop this and make it a thoughtful piece. And during our testimony, where Representative Daphne and I spoke on behalf of the delegation, we're saying if the unfortunate case comes in the future of campuses have to be closed, and we're not saying that, you know, we're opposed to it in long term, because who knows in 35 years if enrollment is down and they're not efficient. Right. We as the legislators should be the ones who are accountable to the taxpayers to make that hard decision, not a Board of Regents whom nobody voted for.
Do you Do you have any support from other legislators in the rest of
the
state?
Both sides of the aisle.
Absolutely,
yeah, the delegation that supports, that represents Norwalk Community College has worked with us similarly in a bipartisan fashion to try to work together.
So we're just not living in our own little bubble on this issue?
No.
Okay. All right.
Now, and I would add, Dave, too, that, you know, I mean, I think everybody knows the issue with the lottery that happened and the lack of legislation oversight with that. So I think that that's a good example of the need for this. So I would just add that to that.
All right. Let's squeeze in one last call. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
I got a question. Should ECS money be equal if the town's losing student population?
All right. Interesting question from Jack. Jack's on top of those numbers.
I think that the new ECS formula that we adopted last year recognized that there are communities that have declining populations, and also changes the minimum budget requirement for those towns. So while ECS dollars may be going down, the town would also be able to reduce the amount of money that they're spending to support that particular school, because that issue and the community college issue actually also tie together. We have declining enrollment, and I would argue that it ties into some other issues as well, that people are having less children, and we have less young people in our state to populate those schools and the community college.
Rick, are you hearing ECS concerns from your district at all yet?
Well, I am, Dave, but you have to understand that all three of the towns that I represent are aligned school districts, which makes a big difference.
Right.
And none of the towns I represent are alliance districts, and this is a huge issue because small towns, we said this at the top, are very lean funding. So, you know, even though one may be a $250,000 loss to a small community of 1,000 like Eastford, that's an issue.
We are good in. Please.
I was just going to add that, you know, I have two towns, Killingly and Plainfield, which are very like in population. And Plainfield had got whacked last session. And it looks like the proposal on the table is to hit them hard again, almost $2 million down. So it would be huge.
I feel like we just scratched the surface in this hour. Although we talked about a lot of things, you all have a lot of work to do. I appreciate you taking the time coming from the COG meeting and spending some time with us. You are all welcome here anytime when you've got things that you're working on that you want to share. Our listeners are interested, and they are certainly interested in giving you their feedback. Thank you all for coming in.
Thank you, Dave.
Welcome you back anytime. Get a little rest in this session, too.
Thank you.
All right. We will now take a break for news, our national and international news, and then, of course, our local news with Cherie. More of the talk show coming up Monday morning starting at 9. More guests, and again, we'll be joined by Governor Ned Lamont next Wednesday, so stay tuned for that. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. We'll see you Monday.